Hey everybody, this is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing today?
I am bright and alert, totally.
Bright and alert, totally. You ate some lime Oreos.
Limeade Oreos, they are fantastic.
Before we begin on this week's episode, I do want to touch on something we mentioned in last week's episode. We talked about neither of us had remembered Homer's Odyssey being syndicated. I got a lot of people talking to me on the social networks, social media, saying that they've seen that in syndication. The only episode that on record hasn't been syndicated is the World Trade Center episode, for obvious reasons. It's strange. What Fox affiliate you had, Matt?
I have no idea.
I remember I was Fox 35. I remember that's the one I watched, and I do not recall ever seeing Homer's Odyssey on there. I'm really wondering if it was a regional thing, if different affiliates didn't play it for different reasons or not. I don't know if they even paid attention. But I know that neither of us remember seeing it. On to this week's episode. We are doing episode 7G04, There's No Disgrace Like Home, episode 4. Written by Al Jean and Mike Reese, who are big, big, big names in the series history. They both were showrunners on seasons 3 and 4, widely regarded as some of the best seasons. And Al Jean is the current showrunner since season 13, I believe. He's to blame for all the problems of the current Simpsons.
That's right. Get your pitchforks ready, folks.
I'm sure he does a fine job with what he has to deal with, considering a show that's running on this long. It's difficult to come up with new ideas.
Simpsons did it. They did, and I'm pretty sure they will soon have completely recreated the works of William Shakespeare on The Simpsons.
Yep. This episode was directed by Greg Vanzo and Kent Butterworth, who didn't do much except this. They just worked on the show in other ways, but really didn't direct anything else. Originally aired in January 28th, 1990. Chalkboard gag is, "I will not burp in class." This is before they start getting real clever. They try to be serious about it. And the couch gag was Homer simply being squeezed off the couch onto the floor and yells "Dough." Again, not very clever, just kind of, make them up as they go along.
Yep, nothing really fancy happens. And I don't think really in most of the first season the couch gags are pretty simple.
I guess it's simple for simple's sake, just because later on they get so ridiculous that...
That's true, especially with all their guest directors.
Yeah, precisely. This episode sees the Simpsons... Again, contrasted with kind of a quote-unquote normal family. Episode starts with Homer taking all them to the company picnic that is at Mr. Burns' manor. We get another look at Mr. Burns. This isn't really Mr. Burns' episode, but the first act is really structured around Homer's wanting for his approval, basically.
That's true. It seems in the first act, Mr. Burns really seems like he is a stand-in for a distant boss figure that Homer wants to impress. There's nothing particularly crazy about him. He just seems the usual upper management type that has no real relationship with his line level workers.
No, and Homer just, he keeps telling the kids, be normal. Be normal. This whole episode is about him. It's strange that Homer is the one taking this viewpoint, this perspective. Usually it would be Marge, probably. To a lesser extent, Lisa, who wants the family to be more like a normal family, a nice family. But in this one, it really paints the rest of the family as being, happy with the way they are. And Homer he looks at the other families at the picnic, and he sees, people who love each other, who are nice to each other, and he wants his family to be just like that.
That's true. And of course, the kids end up acting crazy. I mean, to be honest, everyone in the Simpsons family in this episode tends to act like a normal family. The kids run around getting all kinds of crazy crap. Marge drinks a little bit too much when she doesn't realize there's alcohol in the punch. I mean, it's things that really could happen to a normal family.
Yeah, it's nothing outrageous. The kids are 8 and 10 years old. Them messing around with geese isn't that far-fetched. They go to the coming picnic. Marge gets drunk. Bart and Lisa mess around with geese. Bart and Homer get entered into the mandatory sack race, which Mr. Burns, it's pretty much rigged for Mr. Burns to win every single year. And Bart doesn't like this fact and tries to beat him. Homer manages to stop him in the nick of time, catches up to him and tackles him, basically. It's a really nice segment. I like that segment, how it's shot. And it's strange to me that Mr. Burns is perfectly fine with the fact that he gets a head start. It seems that he's okay with that.
Well, Mr. Burns is one of those people who obviously has to win very low self-esteem. I mean, he sees somebody else literally tackle another person, another competitor at the finish line. He's like, oh, almost got me this year, with the obvious threat that if he had not won, they would have been, you know, they would have released the hounds on them.
Yeah, I think it's funny that Bart is disobeying Homer in this regard. He's not being normal, but he's doing the right thing. Like, it's like a matter of principle that, you know, everyone else is being forced to lose to this old man for no reason, aside from the fact that he's their boss.
Yeah, it's one of those things where everyone always paints Bart as this rebellious, anti-authoritarian figure, and he is, but for the most part, it's in ways that are very understandable to anyone who's had some sort of oligarchy above them that does incredibly stupid things, like, oh, you have to let the boss win. Well, anyone who has a sense of fairness would say, no, that's stupid. I mean, he's very rarely destructive for destruction's sake. It's usually because, like with most of the things in The Simpsons, he's pointing out a hypocrisy of society.
Yeah, exactly. And Mr. Burns ends up winning. The picnic ends. He threatens to release the hounds if people take too long to get out. On the way out, Homer tries to bribe Bart to give him a kiss, which Bart does not like. He thinks it's strange, but you're my dad.
Once again, especially since it was the two episodes back, Bart the Genius, where they had the same, a very similar issue where they weren't sure if it was okay to kiss.
Yeah, and their relationship is often not even much like father and son. Sometimes it's like almost a big brother. Homer's sometimes a big brother figure half the time. You know, they're relatively the same maturity level.
Yeah, and Homer's always, he doesn't have the sense of responsibility that most dads would have at that point. Hopefully.
Hopefully. So they go home, and Homer wants them to eat dinner at the dining room table. Everyone's upset because they want to watch television while they eat. I think Lisa presupposes that this is how all families are. Homer, you're not being reasonable. You know, most families aren't like this. They don't eat properly at the dinner table. But Homer disagrees, and he takes them around the neighborhood, like, spying on people. You know, looking into their windows and seeing, you know, how they actually do act like that. People are at the dining room table being nice to each other.
Of course, they would peek in on, like, the three families in the world that actually do that. I mean, honestly, whose dad actually wore a shirt to dinner? Seriously.
I'm sure there's some out there. Mine didn't. But I'm sure there's a dad out there that wore his shirt to dinner.
Right, mine didn't either. There's probably one or two out there, but, you know, most of them didn't. So what's the big deal?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of a central theme of this episode and of The Simpsons as it goes along, is that, you know, most of these families aren't these proper families. That most families are just this group of anarchic rebels who just kind of do their own thing, and they just kind of get along for that reason. So Homer's upset, ends up, after they get back home and realize that everyone is better than them, Homer's upset, goes to the bar, and sees a commercial for Dr. Barbara Monroe's therapy on TV while they're watching boxing. He's watching boxing. It's after commercials after a boxing match. And, I think that's one of my favorite quotes of this episode is, you know, I was a fool for looking for the solution in the bottom of a bottle. It was on TV. Of course it's on TV, not a beer. You get in that short scene, you do get the first appearance of Eddie and Lou, the two cops with the dog, suspects Homer as one of the peeping Toms.
And then, Homer can just pass it off as having wiener in his pocket, which, yes, you know, we've all passed off at one point.
That's my excuse for everything. Why you act? I have a couple wieners in my pocket.
That's why the dog likes me so much.
Yeah, the dog loves me because I have wieners in my pocket. But he ends up, they break into the college fund. He wants them to take them to Dr. Marvin Monroe, but it costs too much. They don't have the money, which is a recurring theme in the first few seasons of the show. They're really centered on their budget and how they don't make much money. So they break open the college fund, which has like $80 in it, and Lisa, you know, there goes my young girl dreams of Vassar, which I like. That's really a really lovely in character quote for Lisa this early.
That's true. It's actually really funny because later on she references and says, at this rate I'll only get into Vassar. Like in the very first season, that was her dream college, and then later on her ambitions go up.
Yeah, she wants to get a better Ivy League school than Vassar. So they still don't have money with, they need $250, so they end up pawning the television, which no one in the family wants to do. They get the cash, and they go to Dr. Barbara and Monroe, putting them through therapy, and their first exercise is to draw the source of their fear and anxiety. Bart, Lisa, and Marge all draw a picture of Homer to varying degrees of quality. I think Lisa's is the best.
Well, that's true. I mean, she is the artistic one in the family.
She's the artistic one. She draws the best Homer. And Homer didn't even pay attention to the question and is drawing military bombardment, airplanes bombing his house or something like that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention.
Yes, I'm sorry. I think that's really interesting that he's the one who wants to be a better family and that everyone else thinks he's the problem. The next exercise is one where they get out their physical aggression by hitting each other with foam bats.
But foam bats just don't work very well, do they, Robbie?
No, they don't. Like, you hit someone with them and it just doesn't seem to do any damage. And Bart figures that out and he takes the foam off and then wails on Dr. Monroe in the leg. And so Dr. Monroe takes away all their foam bats. After they realize that, you know, they don't need those because they'll just take off the foam batting. The last exercise is, you know, we got the drastic measures exercise when the first two don't really do anything. And it's a very iconic scene. It's certainly one of the ones people remember most of the early seasons, especially. It's where they're all strapped into these electric chairs where they each control. They each have a button that will shock one of the other members of the family.
And it's not long before they start to use those buttons very vigorously.
Yes, they just end up pushing all the buttons as much as they possibly can. They start, the power in the clinic starts going in and out. The lights start fading in and out. The rest of the patients flee in terror. We get a little cut to Mr. Burns and Smithers. Mr. Burns looking at the consumption of the town and making a remark about how he's hoping that the environmental concerns are going the way of the dodo. Something like that. I think that's very funny that was, you know, 25 years ago almost at this point, and there's still that problem. that did not go away. It has only gotten worse. But they end up shorting out the power almost before Dr. Monroe pulls the plug so his machine doesn't explode. Part of his pitch was family bliss or double your money back. And Homer is quick to point that out when Dr. Monroe wants to kick them out of the clinic because they're so chaotic and troublesome. And so he pays them off in exchange for them not mentioning that they ever went there. And they use that money to buy a better TV. And a TV tray, a TV cart that they can wheel into the dining room.
Because who wants to sit and eat on a holiday without a TV to watch? That's just crazy.
I know, so they can watch television when they actually do use the dining room, like on holidays. A 21-inch one with color.
Ooh, fancy. So massive.
A 21-inch screen. Crazy big.
No one has a TV that big. That's insane.
No, and this episode is, I think, a really iconic one. I think you've mentioned that this is the first one you remember seeing.
Yep. I mean, it's just when people describe The Simpsons in the early seasons, especially season one, they say The Simpsons are poor, they're dysfunctional, and they don't set a good example for how family should be, which most shows on television at the time tried to do.
Right.
And this is the first episode where that is laid out starkly for everybody to see. And that's the focus of the episode. Whereas in later episodes and seasons, it's more of a side dish to the main course or whatever episode is.
Yeah, exactly. This is really saying, like, this is how real families are. This is how most people are. The Homer is telling them, be normal, be normal, be normal in the very beginning of the episode. And yet they win, quote unquote, at the end. They get a better television and a TV cart by not being normal, by being chaotic and dysfunctional. And they succeed by failing in a certain way. That's true in that first episode where they get, Santa's little helper. They only get him because he's the worst dog.
He fits right in.
Exactly. This is the first appearance of Eddie Lou, as we mentioned. It's also the first appearance of Itchy and Scratchy, very briefly. You get him for a brief moment.
That's true. And they will be... It's actually... It's funny, the later episodes of Itchy and Scratchy are far more detail. The beginning, it's basically just a cat and a mouse wailing on each other in the vein of like Tom and Jerry. But later on, the plots, if you can call them that, for Itchy and Scratchy gets so much more involved.
Yes, yes. Is this the first time that that anyone really sings?
I would think so, yeah, because no one ever really sings.
There was no one really. I mean, Bart. I guess Bart did sing about John Henry's "A Steel Driving Man." He sang that song.
That's true, but I mean, the song in this episode is multiple people. There appears to be some animated choreography,
fully orchestrated, something like that.
Yes, and it's funny because in the later clip show, all singing, all dancing. I think this is one of the few singing numbers that is left out of that show, and it's really sad.
Yeah, they only mentioned it very, very briefly in this one. Right. I mean, it's only for like 10 seconds do they actually sing. Marge sings about being drunk, not pouring the wine.
Oh, this is also our first appearance of Yellow Smithers instead of Black Smithers.
Yes, we politically correct Smithers. I think it's time to get our listener question of the week, which I posted it on our Twitter and our Facebook, which you can tweet at us at Simpsons Show Pod. We're on Facebook at The Simpsons Show Pod. And like us, follow us either of those places. You can see our questions of the week as well as respond to answer. And your answer might be read on air. We got tons of good answers. I was really satisfied with the response. So I it's hard narrowing it down. It's narrowed down to a handful, although I appreciate all the response. We got Brandon he's on Twitter at Funny Film Fan. Answered Krusty, represents to me the world the Simpsons live in, not what they seem, and in it for themselves. So he has Krusty. We have Melissa, who's at Ray Lynn. She says Ralph, because everything he says makes perfect sense in the most absurd way possible. It's impossible to not love him. So we got our Ralph, some Ralph love. Craig, who's at Craig McKee on Twitter. Also, he says by far Sideshow Bob, the cleverest character of all, and Sideshow Bob Roberts is by far the best episodes ever. Die Bart Die as the Bart the singing of the HMS Pinafore, which that's certainly one of my favorite episodes. Sideshow Bob, great answer. Then the last answer, which I think takes the cake, Thomas on Facebook. I would really like to say hooray for everything because they are the only characters that got funnier once I understood that they were covering a really strange Lou Reed song many years later. They deserve to be up there with Lurleen in terms of recurring characters. Otherwise, in a more serious response, I am a Krusty the Clown fan because of his complex character. He started off as a disaffected clown who has great commentary on celebrity culture. As time went on and he became Jewish, he became more and more interesting. He may get desperate at times nowadays, but I feel he's always a guaranteed laugh. And I hope you eventually address Groening's initial thoughts on Krusty being a costume version of Homer and why that is why Bart looks up to him, which is a certainly interesting point. And once we get to some Krusty episodes, something we can actually honestly discuss. Those are all great answers. Thank you for your guys' response. Matt, what is your favorite recurring character?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Milhouse because Milhouse was basically me as a kid. He's the one I identified with the most. You know, the socially awkward kid who really only has one best friend. And the funny thing about Milhouse is he hasn't really changed at all throughout the series. He's still the gross little nerd who only has one male friend. All the girls can't stand him. I mean, even Lisa, the smart kind of nerdy chick, wants nothing to do with him. And going through his parents' divorce and all the crazy crap he's been through, he's still just a little nerd, not even smart enough to hang out with Martin or the other actual smart kids.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with two. I don't think it's a coincidence that I picked two people who said Krusty is their favorite recurring character. Because I really like the more I thought about it, I recently did the Reddit gift exchange for Matt for Groening you characters, basically, either Simpsons, Futurama, or Life in Hell. But I picked Krusty because when I really think about it, when I don't think of the main characters, like the main family members, I think of Krusty. He's such an absurd character. He's a clown called Krusty, first of all. No, like that doesn't, like it, he's so familiar now we don't even think about it, but he's Krusty the clown. And he is like a weird riff on celebrity culture. But the fact that his personal episodes about him are really touching. Like the one with about his father when, you know, he talks about being Jewish and all that really touching. And I think that he's such an absurd because he can hit all these different points. He can be very touching and also be extremely absurd. The episode where he fakes his own death, that's a really great one as well.
It's funny because Krusty is always that into the world of entertainment, which, I mean, when you think about it, Krusty is, I forget, is he supposed to be nationally syndicated or is he just a local?
No, I think he's a local, like, Matt Groening has gone on record saying, like, he had a local clown. Like, I think it's like a Chicago thing or like a New York, like it would be for like a region, basically.
Right. And I mean, you wouldn't think that someone as a small timer would be that big of an influence, but I mean, it gives them leave to riff on all kinds of Hollywood tropes that, I mean, the jaded entertainer and that sort of thing.
Yeah. He's a gateway to a lot of different stories, which is one of the reasons I like him so much. Next week, listener question will be favorite guest star, either as a celebrity playing themselves or, you know, just a new character. I have a few just off the top of my head already. So, I'll be posting this on all our social media, but, you guys start thinking about that. With that, I think we'll bring this episode to a close. Before we go, we do have our last segment we do last every week, and that is Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
It's where we rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically. Our number one episode right now is Bart the Genius with Homer's Odyssey in last place, as it will probably stay for quite a long time. Yes. Where do you think this one ranks, Matt?
I don't know. It's very close to Bart the Genius for me. I think I would have to put it as a new number one just because of the iconic nature of the Simpsons family troubles. And since most people seem to see this episode as the one that they remember most from the first season, I'd have to say that this one would be my number one so far.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. I mean, I really like Bart the Genius, and I think that it may be Bart Genius's more a tighter episode, I would say. But this one is definitely remembered more. I certainly, if you think about the first season, that scene with the electric shock chairs is one of the things that stand out to everyone. If you ask anyone about The Simpsons, they'll probably think about that. New number one, There's No Disgrace Like Home, is the best episode ever. Until next week, probably.
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 Almost certainly.
Almost certainly. But with that, I think that'll bring us to a close. You can reach us, get us on iTunes. We really appreciate all this. We were not expecting such a response. We were featured on the front page. I was blown away by all the response we've gotten from our show. So if you like us, please subscribe to us, leave us good reviews. It gets us more people. We really like that. You can find us on Facebook and iTunes. I've already mentioned the links to those. It's also on our website. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. Matt despises all forms of social media, so you can't find him anywhere.
That's true, but if you do need to contact me, there is a hollowed-out stump in a park next to a lake in Lakeland, Florida. If you need something, you can always leave it there, and I'll find it eventually.
It's not worth it. Don't go to Lakeland.
He's right. It's not.
With that, folks, I'm Robbie.
And I am Matt.
Keep watching The Simpsons!